the 1950s, there was a television show that went on the air. It was called To Tell the Truth. When, and I'll tell you a little about that show. How many of you remember some version of To Tell the Truth? And actually, there have been, I think it's still on. And certainly, if you go to YouTube, you can find all kinds of episodes. Interesting people have been part of that. But in the 50s, this show started, and basically you have a group of people who would be judges. They were tasked, they were celebrities, of course, they knew everything, right? And the celebrities were tasked with asking questions of a group of three people. And those three people, among them was one person that was sworn to tell, right? And the other two could lie their pants off, right? Because they're going to try to impersonate the person that is being kind of named. So, you know, I could be an astronaut, and wouldn't that be interesting if I was an astronaut? And I could be an astronaut on the stage, and there would be two other kind of like actors or flunkies or whatever, you know, and they would be right there, and they would be talking about their astronaut experience, but I would be telling the truth. I love this show. In the 1970s, when I was in kindergarten, and dinosaurs rule the earth then, I would do half-day kindergarten. Do you remember half-day kindergarten? Half-day kindergarten, and I would come home, and my mom would make me a sandwich, and I would sit in front of the TV, and I would watch this show. And I learned so much, and you know, I'm a kindergartner. I'm not really kind of fully getting some of the subtleties or innuendo or so, but I just learned, you know, people. So it was a great show. And, you know, it has a lot to say about how we understand identity. And when I was thinking about, oh, and by the way, there's a contemporary version of this now that was on ABC. So when I was thinking about what is happening with this whole business of Jesus having that conversation with his disciples, the conversation that we see in other gospels is at the location of Caesarea Philippi. And so if you kind of look at that place, it's sort of the crossroads of civilization at the time. So there's Roman and Greek and Hebrew kind of communities all together. And that brings all their cultures together and their religious systems and all of this. So there he is at the crossroads of humanity, as it were, at least the most easily accessible one. There he is, and he's looking at all that different influence going on, and he says to them, hey, who do you hear that people are saying that I am? And they give him the whole kind of broad list. Well, you're John the Baptist. Well, you're, who knows how sweeping their assessment was, because certainly word was getting around about who Jesus at least seemed to be. That's why people would gather in crowds around him. And then he looks at the kind of the leader of the crowd. He looks at Peter and the rest of them and says, and who do you say that I am? Based upon your experience of me, ever how long we have been together, based upon what you have seen, how you have heard me teach, what we have encountered together, our common experiences, who would you say that I am? And it is Peter that says, you're the Christ, you're the Messiah, you're the one that we've been looking for. You're the one that is supposed to be the anointed one sent by God to save us, the very Son of God. Which is a powerful and beautiful moment. We also know from some of the other gospels that just seconds later, a few seconds later, he blows it. you know. And Jesus winds up saying, you need to stop talking because you're acting like the devil. You're acting like the accuser. Who do you say I am? Jesus asks. And how are we answering that? So if we were on our show to tell the truth, and by the way, just to be clear, not to kind of, I feel like I'm, you know, feel morally obligated to say lying is wrong. Can we be clear on that? Are we good? Really, you know, it's one of the big ten, you know. You won't tell a false story about other people, is what it says in the Ten Commandments. Or, and I just ran into this one recently, a little hard to hear, but from Proverbs 6, from the book of Proverbs, with wisdom about how to live life, these words come. There are six things that the Lord hates. That got my attention, right? There are six things that the Lord hates. No, seven things that are detestable to him. And here are the six. Snobbish eyes, a lying tongue, hands that spill innocent blood, a heart set on wicked plans, feet that run quickly to evil, a false witness who breathes lies, and one who causes conflicts among people that you're connected with. That's quite a list. So just kind of keep that in mind. But let's go back to our show just for a second as we encounter our three contestants. Maybe they're dressed very similarly. They're coached and sort of saying some of the same things and sort of having the appearance on the outside or by their words or their demeanor of the kind of person who would be an astronaut or a fur trapper or a foreign spy. One of the more famous episodes is they got a spy from communist Poland who surrendered himself, asked to be harbored by the United States. Do you remember those during the Cold War? And they had three contestants, and all of them had bags over their heads because the guy didn't want his face to be on TV. You know? That's back in the day, right? So there are our three contestants, one of them, the real Jesus, and the other, how would you tell? Now, part of the job of the judges was to inquire, to ask questions. They would give them a certain amount of time, and they would say, ask away. Ask anything that you want to that would help you, but you only have this little sliver of time to do it. And then a buzzer would kick in, and they would move on to the next judge. And so they would ask all different kinds of questions, trying to piece out who is telling the truth? Try to eliminate those who might seem to be liars. And oftentimes, I don't know the data on this. I don't know how often they were right or not. I should have figured that out before I came to talk to you today. But they would get it right sometimes, and other times they would blow it. Sometimes it seems like they would identify someone based upon other factors that they would guess at or assume, well, this person looks like this or they're saying that, they must be the person at question. And sometimes you can see it happening in the interactions. They project onto the person kind of who they want it to be. I mean, we have a tendency sometimes to dress up Jesus in ways that would make sense for us based upon what we think or what we've been taught or who people have said, well, Jesus would do this or not do that. And it kind of comes back sometimes to the question of, you remember those wristbands that we wore in the 80s and the 90s that would say WWJD, right? What would Jesus, right? But we have these ways of kind of dressing them up as some sort of like, you know, you see the kind of like happy hippie on the one side, right? Contestant number one, right? And then contestant number three, that kind of like Revelation Jesus, the book of Revelation Jesus, with fire in his eyes and a flaming sword tongue, which has got to be uncomfortable to have, you know? And a political figure. Certainly, the disciples at the time wanted him to be a political figure. The zealots in the group were like, please, we got to get rid of these Romans, and we got to make Jerusalem great again. We have to make Israel what it needs to be, what we know it should be, what we should have had. But the reality is, there's lots of images of Christ. There's an amazing way in which artists at different points in time would dress Jesus in period clothes. One of my favorite images of Jesus is a portrait from, I think it's like the 14th century in Italy, and there is Jesus talking to disciples on their way to Emmaus. He's on his way to Emmaus with those other two disciples. They're wearing what they would have understood as period robe at the time, you know, dressed a little bit like me, you know, but certainly wearing what would be customary for them. And here's Jesus come alongside them, and he's wearing the kind of clothes that a 14th century Italian prince would wear. He has tights on. Jesus in tights is a little disturbing, but he looks really fabulous too at the same time. Appearances can be deceiving. What we are drawn to can be deceiving. How we interpret, or we've been taught to interpret, can be deceiving. What people will say about who Jesus is sometimes is not the truth. In fact, that happens a lot. That's why it's really important for us to spend time digging in to that relationship. Now, our celebrity panel, apparently the choir, our celebrity panel would not have had a chance to spend time with those particular contestants. But what if they had? What if they had an opportunity to listen and be at his feet like Mary and Martha? What if they had, well, one more than the other, but they were both around. What if they had had an opportunity to be the a person who had been healed by Jesus, knowing their own shame and guilt and what the world had said about who they are and how they had failed, but still Jesus entering into their life and offering reconciliation and hope and mercy. Mercy, right? What if Jesus happened to be somebody that we knew? Now, this is an image I have shown you before. This is an image that was on the cover of Popular Mechanics magazine in the late 90s. It was also the work of a forensic anthropologist who looked at genetic traits and customs and what was known about Jewish folks about the time of Jesus' life. And based upon that, upon the forensics and the anthropology and a little bit of art, this is what he came up with, an image of Jesus that at least may have been culturally and genetically similar. If you remember the story I told you, this was also an image that reminded me very much of my pizza guy. Which, I love that because my pizza guy was great, and he would make pizza with love. I'm still carrying around some of that love on my pot. But there's an image. Whatever image you hold, however you have held that image, it's okay. As long as you know who you're following. Because when those disciples got up to the top of that mountain, they discovered that there was more than what was on the outside. They discovered that there was something deep and important and much bigger than any category or set of organizing thoughts that they would have had about who Jesus is and what Jesus was about. Of course, there's Moses, and there's Elijah, and there's like the whole business of the prophecy and the law, critical to who Jesus is. There's parts of our understanding of Jesus that puts him as prophet and puts him as priest, puts him as king. All of that is true. All of that wrapped up into this one person. And our best hope of knowing who to follow is to deepen our relationship so that we know his voice. So we don't get lost in the crass voices of imposters around him that might be right up next to him and say, well, Jesus would say this. But in reality, they miss the mark. Jesus tells this story in the gospel, the gospel of John. This is a parable that he tells because people who are accusing him of all kinds of things. And by the way, Jesus had lots of people questioning, who do you say you are? So there is this group that is pushing him back against him. He's addressing them, and then he tells the story, and I'll read it to you from John. I assure you that whoever doesn't enter into the sheep pen through the gate but climbs over the wall is a thief and an outlaw. The one who enters the gate is the shepherd of the sheep. The guard at the gate opens the gate for him. Don't miss this. And the sheep listen to, the sheep hear his voice. He calls his own sheep by name and leads them out. You have to be part of the sheep to know the voice. Whenever he has gathered all of his sheep, he goes before them and they follow him because they know his voice. They won't be a stranger. They won't follow a stranger, but will run away because they don't know the stranger's voice. That takes discernment. Those who heard Jesus use this analogy didn't understand what he was saying. Hard to make sense. So he said, well, let me tell you. I assure you that I am the gate of the sheep. All who came before me were thieves and outlaws, but the sheep didn't listen to them. Don't listen to them. I am the gate. Whoever enters through me will be saved. They will come in and go out and find pasture. The thief enters. The thief, the one who's standing there saying, well, I kind of look like the shepherd. I think I know what the shepherd would want you to do. The thief enters only to steal and to kill and to destroy. I come that they could have life. Indeed, so that they could have life to the fullest, so that they could have abundant life. I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. When we have this confused, hard life, this confused, hard physical life, spiritual life, a life that shakes our souls and makes us wonder, we have to find who to follow and to pick the right contestant. Because there's nobody really kind of standing there saying, will the real Jesus stand up? He stood up. Who do you say that I am? He continues to ask us right now. And I ask it too. I'm trying to be a good sheep too. In the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit.